She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. I have to tell you that every week I can't wait for the intro and wait to get into interviewing my guests because I'm always so excited about what they have to say and what they're willing to share with me and with all of you. Thank you all for joining us today. This show is indeed sponsored by the Fairfax Companies, who are the leader in Arizona in construction waste recycling, and we are very grateful for their ongoing support. Our call-in guest today is Miraval's executive chef, Chad Luthjay, and he has so much to talk about because this is really an over-the-top happening year at Miraval. And a little bit about Chef Chad. He is obviously a successful culinary expert working as the executive chef at Miraval with over 20 years' experience in creating really great food. I've had the luck, the blessings, whatever, to taste quite a bit of it. And he has, his cooking is a commitment and a reflection of Miraval's commitment to full-flavored, fresh, healthy cuisine with local ingredients and non-traditional techniques. So, Chef Chad, thank you so much for joining Mrs. Green's World today. How are you?
My pleasure. I'm great. How are you?
I am great. Great. A good time to be broadcasting from Arizona. Aren't we all so grateful? Okay, let's get on.
What we call Chamber of Commerce weather here.
It really is Chamber of Commerce weather. Friends calling from back east where they're snowed in. It's really hard to imagine. So let's talk a little bit. There's always so much I want to ask you, but one of the things is you actually have a guest table where people can dine in the kitchen. And I wonder, what is that like for you in terms of, like, do you get performance anxiety or worried you're going to mess up? I'm sure the guests love it.
No, it's actually, it's a really, really neat experience for everybody back in the kitchen. It's, you know, for us to be able to bring guests behind the curtain, so to speak, and put them right in the middle of what we've got going on is something that's really a lot of fun for us and I think for the guests as well. So our chef's table is located about 5 feet from the end of our main hotline, and we can accommodate just four guests, so it's pretty intimate. But, you know, probably the biggest challenge is just trying to keep things PG.
And
other than that, it's a blast.
I'm sure it's also a challenge to make the reservations when people know about it. They're lined up, and it's good to know.
It books up pretty quick.
I'll bet you it does. So I think one of the most exciting things that's happening at Miraval this year is the Mindful Eating Cookbook that is going to come out. And this is, I would think, maybe a love of yours, a huge project in the making. How long a project, and how excited are you about it?
We are so excited for this book to come out. It reflects, you know, the last basically about a year of our lives just, you know, poured into getting the recipes together, making sure that, you know, what works for us for 100 to 150 guests will work for you at home for, you know, four guests and so on and so forth.
It's so different than just writing a book. I mean, really and truly, and the illustrations and the pictures. I was out there once and they were shooting just the setup for the pictures because you want it to be beautiful also, not just have the contents be working.
That's right.
So it's going to be great.
That's right. Well, it's got to be, you know, it's got to taste great, it's got to be beautiful, and it has to be good for you as well. So it's, you know, those are the three points that we're always trying to touch on.
Well, there is a buzz about it in the community in which I live and in Mrs. Green's World, so we'll be doing a lot to continue to create the buzz. And is the estimated time to hit the streets still late April, early May?
May 1st, but
May
I believe
1st.
If you go online to Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com, you can actually pre-order now.
Okay, well, that's good to know, and that's good Facebook information for Mrs. Green.
Absolutely.
I'll get people excited about that. You know, it's starting 2012, and I think there's probably several hundred billion of us that start the new year with a commitment to do some things better, including healthier eating. Do you have a most important tip or a couple that you would give to someone who really wants to move in cooking in a more healthy direction this year?
Well, I think the healthiest thing that you can do, first of all, is anything that you can find the time to cook for yourself as opposed to, you know, opening a box and having something pre-made. That is a great step in the right direction. From there, you know, there's many simple things that you can do from, instead of free pouring your olive oil or your canola oil out of a bottle, maybe put it into a little laundry-style trigger spray bottle to help control how much oil you're using when you cook. That's probably the number one thing
that's
you can do.
That's really interesting. So you just spray the pan.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Just, you know, go to Home Depot or your local grocery store and just find one of those $2 spray bottles and put a little bit of, we do a blend of what we call the Miraval oil blend, which is about three parts canola to one part olive oil.
Okay.
Put it in the bottle, and every time you pull the trigger, you're going to get, you know, somewhere on the average of about a quarter of a teaspoon of oil. And, you know, really all you need to saute with is just enough oil to lightly coat the bottom of your pan, and that's pretty much it.
That's a really good one. That's a really good
one. So that's a super easy thing, and you won't even miss those calories. You know, if you think about how much one tablespoon of oil contains, we're talking like 140 to 160 calories, and you can cut out, you know, 90% of that. I mean, that's easy right there. Another thing that you can do is buy yourself a microplane zester, which they sell at any kitchen store and online for, you know, $10 to $15, and with that you can add a little splash of flavor to any dish, whether it's just a little freshly zested lemon, lime, or orange, or some freshly grated Parmesan cheese, or fresh nutmeg or cinnamon. Just packs a ton of flavor without adding a lot of extra salt.
So give me a visual for that. What is it? What is this zester? Is it a little?
This looks like a wood rasp with a pretty handle on it, basically.
Okay.
And it's an essential tool for any kitchen of anyone who likes to cook, even if it's just cooking a little bit. And you basically just take a whole lemon or an orange or a wedge of really good hard cheese and just pass it across that rasp a couple of times and just gently tap the rasp on the plate of food that you're preparing, and everything comes out and garnishes it up.
So it looks. Does it look like a? Does it look like a grater, like a little grater that you just hold over the food? You can tell
about
my.
Yeah, kind of like a cross between a cheese grater and,
yes,
a wood,
okay,
rasp.
Okay.
Very, very fine holes.
I've got the visual, and you know, sometimes I really am very excited about the show today, which is not unusual. I forgot to say that also in studio today is Debbie Claddagate. I've got three pages of questions for her, and she's the owner of TriSports.com, which is the largest supplier of triathlete gear in the world. And the reason I remembered is because when you're talking, she was sitting here shaking her head. So, Debbie, welcome. We're going to have a whole show talking
about you. Thank
okay,
you.
So we're excited about that. But, okay, my last question. I am very curious to know, how do you and your team come up with new recipes that make the Miraval cut? Are you constantly experimenting? Do you do it as a team? What's that process, the inside edition for Miraval?
Yeah, it's actually a very organic process. There's nothing scripted about it. You know, we're blessed with a great kitchen that's basically a year old. And about, you know, on average, we've got $45,000 to $50,000 worth of food sitting around at any given time. So we have, you combine that with a fantastic kitchen that's fully stocked, and the ideas just flow. You know, you find something that you like, you take it out, you play around with it, and modify it a little bit, make it for somebody else, and then they throw in their suggestions, and it just, you know, you kind of meatball it around the kitchen, so to speak, where one person takes it and adds their own touch to it, and, you know,
and has the discriminating palate. One of the things that strikes me for the times I've been out there is how this may sound ridiculous, but how fresh the food tastes. There's just the spices and the ingredients that you put in. Sometimes it looks like I won't like it, because even though my name is Mrs. Green, there's some green that I'm not very fond of. But I try everything when I'm out there, and it tastes so fresh. So what about are there a lot of challenges to sourcing locally? I know that you commit to do that whenever you can, but you have the guests showing up whether you have enough food or not.
Right.
You know,
and,
from
you
local
know, we,
sources.
We source locally, you know, where we can, where we have a steady source that will sustain our business. But, you know, we have our own herb garden on premises. We bring tomatoes and apples and apricots and peaches in from Wilcox, and cucumbers, nuts in from Salrita, things like that. Obviously, we've got no shortage of Nopalito cactus and prickly pears
right.
and things like
just
that.
Just go out in the back.
Citrus,
right.
sure, oranges, lemons, you know. So it's, I think the reason that you taste that freshness, though, is that every single thing that we do here is made absolutely from scratch. There's nothing coming out of a can or a box. You know, we start with the raw product and oversee it every step of the way until it lands on your plate.
And that is one of the reasons why Miraval is constantly sold out, because people go and all they want to do is come back. So thank you for being on the show. I want to just reiterate that Mindful Eating Cookbook can be pre-ordered. It's Miraval's first cookbook, A Labor of Love. And this was Chef Chad Luthjay, the executive chef at Miraval. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay,
have a great day.
Take care. You have a great
bye-bye.
Green day. Okay, bye-bye. Okay, Deb, sorry about forgetting. I mean, it's like I started reading the questions for Chef Chad. So in studio with us today is Debbie Claggett, owner of TriSports.com, the largest supplier of triathlete gear in the world, and truly representative of a company that's green from the inside out, which makes me so happy. I do have to also add that you're the owner of Arizona's Greenest Workplace Challenge for 2011, which is to me a great accomplishment, and how we started to connect. And it's going to be another content-rich show. Don't forget to connect with me on Facebook and Twitter, and email me info@mrsgreensworld.com if you have questions about today's show, or if you think there's something I might be able to help you with. Always get that social media thing out there. So let's start with the questions, because I have pages. I actually think that there are listeners, many listeners and many people, that don't exactly know what all is involved in the three components to being a triathlete. Obviously, when I came out, myself being one of them, I thought it was swimming and running, and I couldn't figure out the next part. Okay, so go ahead.
A triathlon consists of a swim, a bike, and a run, usually in that order, though occasionally you'll have an event that flip-flops them for some reason or another. There's various distances. A lot of times when people hear triathlon, they immediately think of the big one in Hawaii, Kona, the world championships. But there's distances. They start at sprint level, go up to intermediate or Olympic distance, or also called the international distance, half iron distance, and then full iron distance.
So is an iron man or woman the same as being a triathlete, or is that a category all on its own?
Doing any of those events, you are a triathlete.
Okay.
A triathlon is just those, it's a sport that consists of those three, swim, bike, run. An Ironman means you've completed the 140.6-mile distance, and Ironman is actually a registered trademark of World Triathlon Corporation. So you can do that distance and technically not be an Ironman because it was not produced by them, and there's a lot of independent races put on by other organizations that are the same distance, just not branded as an Ironman event.
And I have this little funny aside that just flew into my brain. I have a friend who is absolutely an Ironman, and he has completed it many times, and he looks like it. And he orders from TriSports.com, and he didn't know it was based in Tucson either. It's just, it's weird. I don't know how that happens, but I thought that was interesting. I also think that I should say, so I don't get in trouble, that it's not, you're just not the owner. Seton is your husband and partner in the business, and very much a part of making the wheels on the huge bus out there go round, round, round. So you're co-owners.
Yes.
And I wanted to make sure that we put that out there. So in case Seton downloads this, he's like, hello, Gina.
He's really the boss.
He's really the boss. Well, that's a story for another show. Maybe I'll have both of you on. So can you give us a little bit of a background on how it came about? First of all, let's clarify for everyone, since this is not really a TV show yet, you are a triathlete. Seton is a triathlete. So how, as much as you want to go back, how that got started, and then the evolution to a 32,000 square foot, absolutely sustainable facility based here in Tucson.
Seton actually started in triathlon when he was 12 or 13. I'm not sure. He decided to
oh
do
my
it.
God.
Yeah.
I think I was barely out of Barbies, if they even had Barbies then. But it's okay. I was not thinking about being a triathlete at 12. It's okay.
No, he was a swimmer. And some guys asked him to do a relay with him, and this was in the old Bud Light series, out at Lake Mead in Las Vegas. And so he started that and got bit by the bug, and his dad was doing them with him.
Okay, so it's genetic.
Kind of, yeah. They both started together. And he just stuck with it. And when I met him in college, I was about 30 pounds heavier. I played softball, you know, so I ran from base to base, and that was about it.
Right, right.
And for some reason, he saw something in me that he liked, so he stuck with me. But it just kind of grew, and he kept training. He did his first Ironman in 1999, his second in 2001. And while he was in that process, he just realized that he just couldn't find gear. He had no source for it. You could get some stuff at bike shops. You could get some stuff at run shops. But there's a lot of really specialized equipment specifically for the endurance side of things that he just couldn't really find.
So tell us a little bit about that, because it is a whole package. And I can see that going from one store to another, searching online. Mm-hmm. And I have taken a very thorough tour of your facility. Nothing comes to mind about that you wouldn't have. But again, not shopping for triathlete gear, but things that I would buy also. So things like what in the endurance area?
There's things like fuel belts that, you know, instead of just a pack to hold water, it holds multiple bottles so that you can have gel, and you can have, you know, you might want to have a couple different options for fluids.
Energy boosts too.
Exactly.
I mean, it's endurance, so it's incredibly hard, and weight really matters because you don't want to be weighting yourself down with heavy things. So I saw a lot of those little gel packs.
Yep. And even down to little things like stretchy laces to replace your shoelaces that make it really quick for you to get into your shoes when you
every
get
second
off the bike.
Counts.
Every
you just don't counts. Think about that.
Yep.
And what about things in swimwear? I know that I saw some things out there and I'm like, what is this? And you said, that's the swimsuit.
Yeah.
Because that slight difference can slow you down as well.
Right. I mean, they're making swimsuits, tri-suits out of materials that are just incredible, you know, designed to repel water, designed to attract water, designed to do anything. And then there's the wetsuits. I mean, we did a count once on if we had just one wetsuit in every size, of every style, of every brand that we carry, it was something like 850 wetsuits. And
you
that's just
kidding.
One size. Of each one.
Wow. Unbelievable. So go back a minute, because the Whirling Dervish brain is working. How did you decide? How did you get the bug from running from base to base in softball to becoming a triathlete yourself?
Well, we started the business. In 1999, Seton was in the entrepreneurship program over at U of A. And he was a tech student because he was getting his master's degree in hydrology engineering. And he thought, you know, can't get this stuff, so I'm going to write a business plan just around
Amazing.
The idea. I mean,
right.
there were some shops online, but he just felt he could do it better. So even though he had a love of the sport, he really approached it as a business, felt that we could make it go. And in December 99, we created our LLC and then opened in April 2001. The other thing that happened, I mean, in April of 2000, I'm sorry, we'd also gotten engaged in 99, and with the opening of the store in April 2000, our wedding slated for April 2001.
Pack it on.
I realized that I had to lose some weight, and so.
I love it. The truth on Mrs. Green's
exactly.
World Radio Network.
Okay. I'm like, I can't look like this at my wedding. And so I started training in secret because I was in the middle of a weight loss program. And I'd go to the gym, and I'd swim at the gym. I'd ride a stationary bicycle. I didn't even own a bicycle. I mean, we owned a triathlon shop, and I didn't own a bicycle other than my commuter bike from college.
You trained in secret, like in the darkness of night?
He had
no clue.
No idea.
Which
I mean,
okay.
He knew I was running.
Right,
I mean, he knew I was working out because I wanted to lose weight, but he didn't know I had signed up for.
So you surprised him.
Right, and our local triathlon had gotten bigger and bigger, and it kept selling out. And I ended up not getting in. I was on the waiting list. And, I mean, I called begging the guy. I'm like,
begging, please, I've got to get in. This is a big surprise, and it took a lot of work. Yeah. So that's how Debbie Claggett became an athlete. Yeah. I love it. And talk about a lot of life changes in your world. So if you just tuned in, we're glad you did. You're listening to Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. Our in-studio guest is Debbie Claggett, who is the co-owner of TrySports.com. And we're going to be asking you a lot more questions because you have a green culture from the inside out. You have tenants on which the culture was built. You have a building that I encourage everyone who's listening and everyone that I'll tweet to go to your website and take a look. It's an amazing, amazing building, and we've got lots more questions. All right. So please stay here with us, the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, and we will be back in a flash.
University of Arizona professor John Pollard asked the students in the Posada San Pedro Hall to consider bringing solar energy to the dorm. Just 3 years later, the Solar Cats, a group of students who took up the cause, have installed 44 solar panels on the dorm, saving 20,000 kilowatt hours of energy and reducing greenhouse gas emissions by 14 metric tons every year. Talk about students with a sunny future. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
She's the most exciting thing that's ever happened to you, and you want to spend eternity with her. She deserves nothing less than the best, an Abbott Taylor original. A diamond engagement ring as exceptional as she is that will make her eyes sparkle every time she sees it. Because we design and make our own jewelry, we can create something wonderful for every budget. I'm Abbott Taylor. I'd like to invite you to come see what Abbott Taylor Jewelers has waiting for you. With 35 years and thousands of original jewelry designs, no one has more experience in designing and making diamond jewelry in Tucson than Abbott Taylor Jewelers. We're proud to say using recycled gold, we have saved over 100 million pounds of toxic waste from this planet. Abbott Taylor Jewelers at 6383 East Grant Road, on Facebook and on the web at atdiamonds.com. Abbott Taylor Jewelers. Diamond designs for everyone. Abbott Taylor Jewelers.
Hi, this is Mrs. Green with some great news about the all-new 2012 VW Passat. It's 2012 Motor Trend Car of the Year, best in class for legroom, and has standard Bluetooth technology. VW thought of everything by giving the Passat a brand new sleek design that conveys confidence and assertiveness. If you're looking for the best ownership experience possible and a great new Passat, visit Chapman Tucson at 4600 East 22nd Street between Columbus and Swan.
You can always find things around the house to give to Goodwill, but I have a bigger reason to give. My brother, Jim. When Jim was just 6 weeks old, he had a stroke. He had to rewire his brain to do most things we all take for granted. Thanks to Goodwill, Jim has a job and a sense of purpose. You know how they say your donation to Goodwill changes lives? Well, it's true. Goodwill is the best thing that ever happened to Jim. Please donate today.
Welcome back, everybody. We are indeed celebrating good times right here at the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to. What an exciting concept that is. I love it. So in studio with us today is Debbie Claggett, who with her husband Seton owns TriSports.com, the largest supplier of triathlete gear in the world, and truly a representative, a game changer, an early adopter for a company on the planet that's green from the inside out. And I am really, really honored to have Debbie in studio today because I know you've got a full plate, kiddo. So let's talk about I talked to you a little bit off air that I interview companies at times where I'm very impressed and my interest is piqued by the green product that they sell. Mm-hmm. But when you go a little bit deeper and dig a little bit more deeply, they're not really a green company. There's such a difference between selling a green product. But you and Seton obviously made a commitment to sustainability, which is the whole green enchilada, as I call it.
Yes.
So talk a little bit about... You have, I believe, four tenets of core values is what I'd call them.
Seven.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so yeah, there are four and then three subcategories. I'm only kidding. But so I think the background for that, for people that are listening, for the budding entrepreneur, the current entrepreneur, it's never too late. How did you decide, and did you consciously commit, if we're going to do this, it's not just going to be about triathlete gear, it's going to be about preservation of the planet?
You know, we never sat down and had that discussion. It was just always, you know, Seton, like I mentioned earlier, has a degree in hydrology engineering, water.
Right. So he's awake.
He's awake. He knows the status of water on our planet and how precious it is. I have a degree in biology. So both of us are very in tune and conscious of the environment. And it just kind of was a given that in our own personal lives, we were going to recycle and do our best to do what we could to preserve the environment. And so when we started our business, it just was natural that it carried over to that. And we've had some limitations, you know, when you're renting a space, you don't really have any control over the building.
Even the recycling at times. I mean, if the tenant doesn't carry on with the recycling program, you don't have to necessarily have that even.
Right. So when we went to the building that we're in currently, which we moved into in October 2006, by the time we purchased it, the walls were already up. But we were able to at least design the inside and try to make it as sustainable as we could. And sustainability is number one on our list of core values. And to us, it's not just sustainability to the environment, it's sustainability in everything we do. With our employees, you know, we want to keep them around. With our vendors, we want to create partnerships and relationships. We just don't want to beat them up for the best price and then, you know, move on to the next one. It's about sustainability in everything
and
that we do.
And partnerships. You build partnerships. Right. I saw that when I was out there and when I did the research. You care about whoever it is you're doing business with, or you see people as part of the corporate culture. And I think it's so incredibly admirable. The 32,000 square foot building, there's highlights. When you drive up, you cannot help but notice the very large rainwater harvesting.
Oh, you saw this?
It's like, okay, yeah, I can see. So tell us about that. They're huge and out there, large and in charge, which to me is such a great marketing message about who this company is.
Yeah, they're each 18,000 gallons. So at any one time, we can be holding 36,000 gallons. And over a year's time, we can collect probably between 110,000 and 130,000 gallons. Just depending how our rain is.
How the monsoons, if we had a good one or not. And we're really looking for rain now. It's been quite a while. What do you use the water that's stored for?
It's for all of our landscaping needs, as well as we use it to wash our truck and trailer that we use for expoing and any other non-potable uses that arise. So we'll use it to wash various things. We come back from expos and our tents, you know, are dirty and need to clean those. So it
really does
things.
Save water. And I'm
it
sure
does.
That you get a lot in those collection monoliths.
Yep.
I mean, that's really amazing. Okay, the latest and greatest breaking news is about your solar array.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such a huge step to take. And I'd like you to expand on that a little bit. And for our listeners and for my own information, you know, what made you decide to do it? The return on investment, all of those pieces of solar, because that's a big building to heat and cool, I'm sure.
It is. It is. And return on investment is definitely nice. It's obviously not the only reason we do it, because we believe in this. And, you know, going back to that water harvesting, there's virtually no return on investment with that. I think it takes about 100 years to get the return on that investment, because unfortunately water is so cheap in our desert that people waste it.
Unfortunately is right. They don't value
it
because
more
they
expensive.
Don't. Yes, they don't. My husband says that all the time. They don't value it because they don't have to pay for it.
Right.
You just go and turn the water on.
Right.
And that's how you get it.
Exactly. So solar, when we moved into this building, Seton said, my goal is to have solar on this building within 5 years. And he reiterated that a few years ago that, you know, within 3 years, that's what we want to do. It is good for the environment. It's good for the building. It's just part of our lifestyle.
Your core values.
Exactly.
Truly, truly.
And so it became a reality. We got it built and flipped the switch the later part of December, and we just had our solar commissioning ceremony last night.
Which I'm sorry I missed, but was a Mrs. Green team conflict because I wouldn't have missed it for the world, and it was so far. I was going far east, so it's like, oh gosh.
No worries. But it's great. It's a 128-kilowatt system. We designed it to cover between 88 and 92% of our power usage with the goal that we would reduce the additional 10% and be 100% covered by the array. So it's so far going great. We have a really great little website that we can look at that shows us all the different things.
Is it through TEP or is it?
No, it's through Technicians for Sustainability.
TFS. Yep. Love them. Love Kevin. Yep. Okay.
And we're creating a little widget that'll be on our website and in store that should be up soon, that where anybody can just, who's on our website, will see exactly what we're generating and how much we're saving. And Kevin yesterday said that the amount that we generate in a year is enough to power 20 houses.
Unbelievable.
Completely. So to put it in layman's terms. And one of the other things that even I didn't realize was how much water we save monthly. We save about 9,000 gallons of water a month by having the solar system there. Which is really cool.
It is really cool. Yeah. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's the multiplier effect and the ripple effect, mm-hmm. which is amazing. I had no idea. 9,000 gallons?
Mm-hmm. In a month.
In a month.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable. Really and truly unbelievable.
Unless I'm misquoting, but yeah, that's
we'll do a correction on another show, but that's really amazing. And Kevin is amazing too. I mean, he talk about someone that's committed mm-hmm. and has a wonderful company and is a game changer in the solar industry as well. I think he's a great guy. Okay. The solar, exciting. And I encourage people to go take a look any way they can if they're in Tucson or if they're coming to Tucson. So let's talk a little bit about, I love to talk about waste. I really do. Or lack thereof. I know we're going to have Albie Zakes from TerraCycle on mm-hmm. next week. And their tagline is how to eliminate waste. That's their goal is, mm-hmm. is you know, let's eliminate it. So you don't, when we're talking about waste at TriSports, it's not just about recycling bins for paper and shredding and all that. So that's a part of it. But tell me about the whole enchilada, because it really intrigued me. And I didn't know this, even though I came out there, is you recycle bike parts. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to talk a little bit about that because you custom build bike parts. And there was a question I didn't ask you. And then you're partnering with Shoe Recycling.
Right.
Which I think is great. Another great community partner.
Yep. And the Shoe Recycling is an interesting one because we partnered with a national company, a national nonprofit that collects shoes, and they ship them all over the world. And then we were at a mud run, and they
tell us what a mud run is.
A mud run is it's basically that. It's like a 5K run, and there's obstacles, and you run through mud, and you get dirty and wet, and everybody has a great time.
everybody that likes to do that.
And at the end, your shoes are in really horrible shape. So a lot of people actually just donate their shoes right then and there. And one of the gals who was working with me on that made some calls around the community and found the Gospel Rescue Mission was willing to take the shoes in any condition. They would launder them, they would clean them, and they would donate them, and they stay in the local community.
That's great.
And so,
I mean, that's really great.
Right.
No shipping, for one thing.
Exactly.
And shoes. I've been involved in social services my past life, and we had kids that didn't go to school because they had no shoes, literally, because they outgrew them, and then the younger siblings had them. So what a great thing, and I'm sure the Gospel Rescue Mission does so many things with homeless.
Right.
So talk about creating a sustainable ripple effect. That's
right, that was awesome, because then that's when we re-looked at it, and you know, this national organization's great. They do lots of wonderful things, but to me, not having to ship it, and then not having to have them shipped somewhere else, and to be able to help our local community was a much more important thing, you know, to see the effects here and now. And so we switched over our shoe donation. So we have a box in our retail store, and anybody can bring their shoes. And it's not just running shoes, it's any shoes. And drop them in the box, and once a month they come and pick them up, and they get them out into the community.
That is so great to know. That's probably a blog, a Mrs. Green blog. I love it, but it's the integration mm-hmm. into the community, and I love that. And people are obviously aware of it and bring their shoes in.
Yep.
And then there's the mud runs, which I might want to put on my bucket list to observe.
They're
someday.
Lots of fun.
I think I would probably have some fun. And then what about the recycling of bike parts? And I think what we should also bring to the listener's attention is you had a very conscious reason for building custom bikes, because you said, again, the inventory thing. I mean, everybody just doesn't want the same bike. So you custom build bikes. Yes,
we do. I mean, we have the stock bikes, but so many athletes, there's specific things that they want. So we get the parts, we get the frames, and we build them up. Almost, there's very few bikes that go out the front door that haven't had something done to them, changed on them, or
some alterations.
Right.
Now, I have to ask this because I don't know, and I know if I don't know, there's millions of people that don't know. What about could someone order their own bike online and they could work with the person mm-hmm. remotely so that they don't have to come to Tucson to get their custom built bike?
Absolutely.
It's like, how do you do that?
Yep.
Take their measurements?
Yep. And most of the bikes we sell are stock frames, though we do work with a couple of manufacturers who will completely custom build a bicycle from scratch for somebody, you know, with their measurements. So most of the ones are, you know, we get fittings. We actually have a fit sheet that we will email out to a customer, and they follow the directions, take the measurements, send it back to us, and we find a bike that works for them. And that's the great thing, is when a customer is not set on a specific bike, because
right.
then we can find the one that fits them the best, because that's one of our biggest things, is we don't want to just sell someone a bike. We want to sell them a bike that fits them properly. So making sure that it is the right bike for them. Sometimes people are really fixated on a specific bike, doesn't fit them well, but they insist, and then you have to do all kinds of different things to get it to fit them as well as you can.
Right, and you try to advise them, and some, like you said, some people, this is what I want, so
yeah.
help me make that happen. And again, it highlights your commitment to superior customer service. Give the customer what they want, but also try to educate them along the
exactly.
way, which I absolutely love that. So what do you do with the recycled bike parts, and where are they, like, different pieces from things you don't use? If you take this piece to do this and this piece to do that, where do the recycled bike parts go?
Well, it's mostly parts that are have reached the end of their useful life on a bicycle, like chains. Chains you have to replace fairly frequently if you're riding a lot. So things like that we send to a company called Resource Revival, and they create art, they create awards, and it's kind of a circular thing, because we then, and I think we'll talk about this later, but we have a race that we put on. And so our finisher medals are actually made by Resource Revival using recycled bike chains. And so it is circular.
It's great. It's cradle to cradle.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. So when it's useful life, there's always a use for it. And my mantra is, don't throw anything away, because there is no more away. You should see us in our own personal lives about just the resistance to any of that. And we had a discussion last night at our team party about one of the staff at the restaurant said, you know, Mrs. Green, I use rags now instead of paper towels. She goes, when I read the thing in your newsletter about paper towels, and a bunch of us kind of went, I cringe, because I still have them, mm-hmm. but we've drastically reduced our use. So it's about that consciousness of, I used to grab 3 paper towels for a little spill and mm-hmm. throw it away.
Right.
And now I'm aware that it had to be shipped here, and it had to be manufactured, mm-hmm. and it has to be handled as waste, and mm-hmm. it can't be recycled. So that's an integrated approach that I love talking about with what all you do.
Yep.
Okay, I'd like to go back a little bit again to the core values, because I think that's important when you're doing what you're doing. And we might get interrupted for a break, but we come back to it, about what you want in your atmosphere, because you said customer, your staff, your suppliers, you view them as partners.
Mm-hmm.
What about your staff? I mean, I went over there, and to say it was a professionally, absolutely professional, casual, a very relaxed is a better word, relaxed feeling. And I was walking in the building and I saw two people come out because I was on the phone walking their dogs. Yep. Is that a basic, like, okay, you can bring your dog to work if you want to, if they're well-behaved?
They have to be
really cool.
They have to go through very rigorous testing.
like,
but yes, they do.
Really
they have to come in. They have to have good manners. Like, our dog does not qualify. He used to come to work with us all the time when we were smaller, but he's a food thief. He'll go into people's bags. He'll take their food. He's horrible. So he doesn't get to come to work anymore.
I think that he's in doggy timeout from work.
I
love it. Oh, my gosh. That's really funny. Your own dog. So the dogs were there, well-behaved, totally well-behaved.
They are.
And it just made me laugh out loud with delight in the right kind of way. So we got the one-minute warning. We are in studio with Debbie Claggett, who's the co-owner with her husband, Seton, of trisports.com, the largest retailer of triathlete gear in the world. I love saying that. Also the winner of Arizona's Greenest Workplace Challenge last year, which you got an entire tribe. And we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit more about the corporate culture and then talk about some of the challenges you faced and also pick your brain and get some insight about the importance of social media in your future, because that intrigues me and a lot of millions of people around the world. You're listening to Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. Please stay here with us. Debbie Claggett from TriSports when we come back.
Go deep underwater without getting wet. Study bugs like a real scientist. Make your shadow move in colors. These are just three reasons to visit the exciting hands-on new exhibits at the Children's Museum Tucson, the region's only museum just for kids. For 25 years, we've ignited kids' imaginations at the Children's Museum Tucson. That's something to celebrate. And admission is only $2 on the first Sunday and on the 25th of each month this whole year. Children's Museum Tucson, where imagination and learning connect.
Hi there, this is Mrs. Green. Did you know that the 2012 VW Beetle has been completely redesigned, that it has exciting new features, look, and performance, and that it is one of Oprah's best things for 2012? The best news is Chapman VW has them in stock. Check out the new Beetle at Chapman VW at 4600 East 22nd Street between Columbus and Swan, or visit them at TucsonVW.com. Be sure to tell them that Mrs. Green sent you.
What if you had simple and easy solutions to live, work, and play green? Green Living Magazine, the premier green lifestyle magazine, brings you the latest in organic cooking, gardening, health and wellness, chef and celebrity interviews, as well as easy solutions to clean up your everyday life. Visit greenlivingaz.com for the latest in green news. Buy your subscription and view our network videos. Find us on Facebook and Twitter, and again at greenlivingaz.com.
At the University of Arizona, we're putting solar know-how to work. And it's not just our researchers. Our students are on the job as well. Our student solar racing team, using recycled solar cells from NASA, designed and built a car from scratch that gets the equivalent of over 3,000 miles per gallon. Talk about students who will go far. Really, really far. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
Welcome back, everybody. The boys are back in town, but the girls, the women are here now, and we are so happy to be, I'm so happy to be sharing time with Debbie Claggett, who is the co-owner of TriSports.com, the largest provider of triathlete gear in the world. It's just fun and exciting, and talking to someone whose company is committed to the seamless thread of sustainability. I think it's just, you're an incredible example, game changer, hopefully, for businesses that are listening, because it can be done and your growth has been phenomenal.
Thank you.
So it's been successful as well as great for the preservation of the planet. So we were talking about recycling. Mm-hmm. And like you said, your recycling containers outside are bigger than your garbage cans, which is a great indicator. Ours too. And the amounts going in them are smaller.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's huge. And I didn't see a big array of cases of plastic bottles at your workplace either.
Nope.
Thank you so much for that. That's one of the first things I see when I go into a green company. I'm like, well, maybe not so green. And I keep my mouth shut. So recycling, and you have the whole system of the efficiency of what you do for people that take a tour, there's time efficiencies that create it. Ultimately, to me, I can trace anything to sustainability, believe me, but to really maximize your shipping methods, maximize your packaging methods, mm-hmm. that all has a ripple effect.
It does.
So you got help, a little bit of help mm-hmm. from, was it UPS?
Yes.
Because they have it down.
They do.
They got it timed.
They have a whole logistics department. They have a whole everything. And when we were looking to move from our old location to our current location, they actually came in and they followed our employees and counted their steps. Everything.
Are kidding.
Nope. They looked at how long it took them to pick an order and made recommendations based on that for setting up our new warehouse, which was really important to us because we wanted to make it as efficient as possible without, you know, spending a fortune, because you can make it really efficient if you have a lot of money.
Right, right. And have conveyor belts dropping
exactly.
everything in.
Exactly. It's going to
really
be automated.
Space.
But
yeah. So you get people running like crazy.
Exactly.
So can you give us one example of the advice they gave you that you made a change?
Just how to pick the orders, how to place products. Because in the past, at our old place, we just knew where everything was. And we organized the warehouse. You know, it was organized in a clothing section, a wetsuit section, a nutrition section. And it didn't matter how much or how little an item was actually picked. That was just where it went, and they were in order by item number, which we all knew all the item numbers by heart. But as you grow,
you cannot do
it
that.
Just, yeah,
you cannot
things
do
change.
That and succeed, right?
And so setting it up so that the items get picked the most are closer to the packing stations. The items that get picked the least are further away. And we might have a bike part next to a shirt, next to a swim goggle. It doesn't matter. They're all in labeled bins, and a location is just a location.
And did they help you with, you know, to me, shipping, packing, mm-hmm. more than shipping, is such a visual component. Mm-hmm. And if you have visual challenges, which sometimes I do in terms of proportion. So in our partnership, it's Mr. Green that does getting everything in the box. Mm-hmm. Did they help you with efficiencies in that area, or do you have trained staff that kind of know how much I can fit in this box?
You know, it really kind of started with Seton and myself, and that we were just very particular that a package looked nice when it arrived, and we just trained our staff on that. So there's companies I get shipments from that I'm shocked because the box is enormous and there's something tiny in it, and
us
it just
too.
Kills me.
It
that,
kills
and they
us
put
too.
Tons of packing material in there because for them it's a money savings to only have two sizes of boxes. I don't know how many sizes we have. We must have at least 20 different sized boxes, and so we try as hard as we can to fit products
kind
into
of eyeball
boxes
it. Yeah.
Yep. Okay. And our guys are great. I mean, just from experience, they know what fits where.
They get better.
Mm-hmm. And, yep.
Okay. So what about the green box program? That's something you're excited about. And I am
it
too.
Is.
Tell
it's
us about
exciting.
I like anything that says green, fill in the blank. So the green box program.
The green box program, it was something where, like I said, we were always very particular about the appearance of the boxes, but we also want to recycle. And for a long time, we were saving boxes that were in decent shape from our suppliers and reusing them and sending them to our customers. But there was always that part of us that said, you know, we don't want them to get a box and say,
from somebody else,
I can't believe right. this is what they sent
right,
me.
Right, right.
So from that, we actually created our green box program, which we recycle all packing material. We reuse it all from our vendors. And then we recycle and reuse pretty much every box we can from them, unless they're just totally destroyed or they're way too big, in which case we recycle them, or we reuse them as bin locations within our warehouse. So we put an option on our website with a checkbox for customers to choose whether they wanted a green box, and that way they knew they were getting a recycled box and it might not be a new box. And we had such an overwhelming response to it. About 80 to 85% of our customers were choosing that and actually taking the time to check that box, that we just turned it into the default. So if somebody wants a brand new box, they can uncheck it. But overall, the triathlon community is very, very environmentally conscious, and they want to see that. They want to get that. So now it gives us the excuse to reuse all those boxes without that feeling that we might be disappointing a customer when they get a box that, you know, says some other company name on it or has a crossed out label on it or something.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, another one for people to are listening to watch. And I would like to assume that the customer is there, the clients are there, instead of thinking it's going to be a battle. I think in this world in which I live, the consumers are more ready than the offers that are coming out there from retailers. So mm-hmm. I really think that that's true. The consumers are ready. Show me how. Help me.
Right.
I want to do the right thing. Okay, I'd love to talk a little bit about sustainability of not just Debbie, but Seton Cladding, and then the your kids. I mean, you are a wife and a mother and a big business owner that's growing, and you do things in the community. And to me, how do you maintain life and balance if you're willing to share that? Because it's huge. You don't have children that are on their way to college.
No.
You have little children, and you're both very involved in a growing business. Mm-hmm. How do you maintain the balance and sustain yourself? Because you're a triathlete, and so is Seton. Like, yep. How's that all working at the household?
It's funny, because I just wrote what was going to be a blog about it, but it turned out to be too long, so
it's
we're going to post
the beginning of a
else,
book. No, yeah. The beginning of a book. Self-published book. Yeah, right. Yeah. Add that to your list.
Yeah.
I'm going to write a book next year, too.
When I have time. Yeah.
Right. I'm giving up sleeping for 2012.
You know, the great thing is that Seton and I met working together. So we've always had
a great working relationship.
And it's the only thing we've ever known. I mean, we've pretty much actually lived together and worked together since we met, because we met as RAs in a dorm at the University of Arizona. So it didn't dawn on us that we shouldn't work together.
Right. It worked.
It does. It works. We get along great. We complement each other well. And it was funny, because when we made the decision for me to leave my job and come work full time with trisports.com, all of his swimming buddies who didn't really know me, because I hadn't gotten into triathlon that much, all said, "Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't work with your wife. It's the worst thing. You're going to get divorced." And he's like, "That's the only thing I ever knew."
I love the story. So, it sustains my heart.
Yeah.
So we
for a long time, it was just work, 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 work. And then we decided to start a family. And the decision was made, you know, for, I don't want to say because of gender roles or anything, but it just made a lot more sense in our case, because he is more of the businessman. He understands the numbers. He understands the financials. He understands just how it all works. I was more of the customer service person.
Which is huge. I mean, you talk about a good partnership and strengths.
Right.
To the table. It's great. So
yep.
You decided you were going to be the one to have the kids.
Right. Exactly. Yes. Not him. But that I would probably step back a little bit from the
right.
company. So I'm
right.
still very involved. I still go to work every day. There was some time there where I was part-time when the kids were younger, but even at 3 and 6, they're still very young. And so we just create what works. I mean, he's usually the one who's at work later, and I'm usually the one getting the kids from school.
Right.
But it's definitely a juggle. I mean, the biggest juggling is with the training and the workouts. And so what we came up with was simply, after our daughter was of an age where I could get away more, we just decided to trade off training years. And it was never really a big, you know, dilemma or discussion. It just kind of came to be that that's what we were going to do. And so this is my season. Last year was his. And in our seasons, we get to choose to do whatever events we want to. And it's not that the other person doesn't ever get to train or do
right,
anything.
Right, right.
It's just that the focus for training, for racing, is on whoever's season it is. And then the other one is primarily responsible for getting the kids to school, getting them up in the morning. So with it being
my
season.
What a great partnership.
Yeah.
I mean, what a great partnership.
It works really well. I mean, I advise this for any couple, honestly, even if they don't work together, because we're not fighting over whose turn it is to train and who's supposed to take the kids to school and
right,
whatever.
Right. Great partnership.
It is what it is. And he knows that I have workouts 6 days a week, and that he's the one who has to get the kids to school, and then he'll ride his bike to work, or he'll run to work, or, you know, he'll do a workout at the gym or whatever, but he just knows that he has to work it around my training, which
right.
he actually makes my training plan, so he knows exactly when I need to train.
Oh my gosh, that's really, it's so impressive. And I don't like to get schmarmy on the show, but I put down in my notes, I said, this is truly the green Wonder Woman. I mean, it's hard enough if you don't own your own business and you have small children to negotiate all of those kids are sick, this, that, and the other thing. So it's really impressive to me that you have such a commitment to that partnership and the sustainability of your own family. I think it's great to talk about and to spread the word about.
That is the most important part of our lives.
It is. It really is. Family trumps everything for me. And I worked for most of my adult life, and it was really hard on us emotionally because I was thinking about what I was missing.
Right.
And I have great, amazing, wonderful children, but it was because of those priorities.
Right.
We never missed a swim meet or a soccer game or all of those things that you're going to start doing really soon.
It's amazing because, I mean, especially in the triathlon world, everybody knows what Kona is. Well, Seton qualified for Kona this past November, and he had already decided if he did qualify, he wasn't going to go. But then when faced with actually having the spot, he still just no question at all. He's like, you know what? I want to spend time with the family. I'm tired of the long training. I need to concentrate on the business. Something has to go, and I'm not going to do Kona. And
what an example. So I mean, I want to like do that. I haven't rung the bell in a while, but it's like, yeah, I like that. That's a bell ringer to me.
And the other thing we do is we really integrate our children into the business because it's a fun, casual business. You know, they come to all of the events. They don't know any different. They were fighting this morning because we had our open house and we got these green shirts.
Right.
They're actually blue, but swim, bike, run, powered by the sun. And so each of the kids, I snagged one for them. And my daughter wore hers last night because she was there. My son wasn't. And so he was wearing it this morning. And she was so disappointed she couldn't wear hers again because she got stuff all over it.
It's great. Do you see two triathlete juniors in the making? I mean, it amazes me that Seton followed in his father's footsteps.
They're
probably going to love it.
If they do, that's great.
If not.
They're both already great swimmers. And, you know, they talk about it. And that would be wonderful. But if they don't, then, you know, so be it. We'll be at their soccer games or their basketball games or their baseball games or whatever they choose
to do. And we'll wait to see it unfold because I'm sure this is not your last visit to Mrs. Green's World. And I want to add, and it's these thoughts just come into my head because I'm trying to give our listeners a visual for the magnitude of that building. I mean, it's a really big building, and you have people can go in and train for swimming
You could actually do a full triathlon within our building if you wanted to.
Training?
You could do the event.
That's big. That's really big. I had no idea about that, but you and I've talked about it, and I probably never will. Never say never, but I'm not putting that on my bucket list. Triathlete. It would be a great show. Yeah, it would really be on Comedy Central, I think. Okay, what about some of the challenges? And was there it's very curious to me about a tipping point. You have a business model that works. It's growing in these challenging economic times. You've done amazing things. Did you sit there at one point and say to each other, oh my gosh, this is really working and it's growing and we are going to have to answer some questions we may not have thought of the answers to. Tell me a little bit about that journey.
Well, every day. I mean,
every day.
but along with the, oh my gosh, this is working is the, oh my gosh,
this is working.
Yeah. What do we do now?
Right.
No, you know, Seton's pretty incredible. He has a great business mind. I mean, literally for the first 5 years, his forecast was within a couple percent for our growth. Other people didn't believe it when he presented it.
Right,
but
right.
I mean, he was dead on. And it's a lot harder to transmit that vision and as you grow. So growing pains wise, I mean, it's great to grow, but
maintaining the integrity.
It's hard because then you have so many different personalities, you have so many different departments, you have so many different things going on, and everything has to mesh to make the engine go. So it's one of those things where I'd say the biggest growing pain is just making everybody work well together.
Huge. And I've been there. I've built corporate companies. Mm-hmm. I mean, really from a mom and pop to a national company. And it was always to me, there comes a point where it's really obvious that the people that got you to where you are, you're going to either have to keep them doing what they're doing, but there has to be new people that get you to the level that you're either already operating at or to get you where you want to go.
What got you here won't get you there.
What got you here won't get you there. And that's a big, huge challenge. And we don't have a lot of time left. I think that I want to make sure people know that they can go to trysports.com and really find out a lot about who you are and what you do. And I think the website is fabulous. And my final question, we have about 2 minutes left, is obviously a 1 minute. Your spin on social media in the importance of developing your business.
Oh, it's huge. I mean, I don't understand all of it. We have a marketing department who does, luckily. But it's the future.
Huge.
There's no doubt about it. If you want your company to succeed in this day and age,
you
have to have mobile. You have to have social media.
You have to feed the social media monster. Well, I am thrilled. I can't believe time did fly. We were having a ball. Next week, Albie Zakes from TerraCycle. Their mission, eliminate the idea of waste. Need I say more? Can't wait to see and talk to Albie. Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, thank you, Debbie, so much.
Thank you.
Best of luck to you and Seton and your family, and I'm sure we'll be talking again soon. Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, make it a great green week.